Game 3 of the NBA Finals, we got offensive and defensive adjustments for both teams.
And we finally might have a resolution to the weird Brian Colangelo saga in Philadelphia.
That's a shame. I want that thing to drag on. It's the Wednesday Locked On NBA Show. Let's go do it.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Locked On NBA Podcast. Thanks for tagging along with us all week long. We are now a daily podcast here on Locked On NBA. We've been so for a little while. I am John Corrales, co-host of the Locked On Celtics podcast. You can find me on Twitter at RedsArmy_John, and you can find my work on RedsArmy.com and Boston.com.
And I'm Jake Madison, host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast at NolaJake on Twitter, and you can read my writing over at LockedOnPelicans.com.
So we'll get to the Colangelo stuff because that's sort of pseudo-breaking. The Woes dropped the bomb that he could find out his fate on Wednesday. So this is the Wednesday show. We won't know. We won't know what's going to happen until at some point during the day Wednesday when Woes drops that bomb. In the meantime, there is a Game 3 of the NBA Finals, and we have to go through and do our due diligence and see offensively, defensively, what adjustments can be made. Can the Cavaliers get one game? Can they change the course of this series?
So that's the question. It's not can they win both of these at home? Can they win the series? It's right now, can they get one game?
This is it. Like, we all know. We have the luxury here, Jake, of being real. Let's just be real with everybody.
That's what we do on this podcast here. We keep it real.
This isn't like after the Celtics won the first two games, I thought it's probably over. But this one is like definitely over. Like they had to win one of those first two.
Yeah, and we don't, because this has been covered already on Locked On NBA here and on the network and on the show. Like, we don't need to rehash games one and two. But after game one, where it took LeBron putting up 50 points. What, 58-8 or 51-8-8, whatever it was. And they still couldn't win. And it wasn't like, you know, usually if he gives that kind of performance, you should blow out the other team. But this supporting cast and just everything going on around them is so bad that that just keeps you close.
Yeah. And so we're here and we have to talk about it. We have to give it the potential, the credence for, all right, is there anything? So let's just start with the Cavaliers. Is there anything offensively, like, what can the Cavaliers do to get, because everybody's in agreement, you need to get something from somebody else. What can the Cavaliers do to get something from somebody else?
Can they play every game at home where their role players are at least, I wouldn't say significantly better, but better at home? And this has been a theme for them throughout the entire playoffs, so we've seen this. There's a bit of a track record there. But if they can play every game at home, maybe they have a chance of keeping some of these close and maybe winning some games. But that's really it. They need these other guys to step up, play with some basketball IQ, I think is a safe thing to say. And they just can't get it done on the road offensively. I don't know. Maybe you need a big Tristan Thompson game, but I don't, with Draymond Green in there who neutralized Anthony Davis pretty effectively, you're not going to really get that.
I think it's really, really important to move the ball offensively. And I've struggled kind of going back and forth with this. Obviously, LeBron James is intensely important, right? That's like the dumbest, most obvious thing you can say, that LeBron James is the most important guy for the Cavaliers to score. But at the same time, they so need other players to get going early that I think it's best for LeBron to be more of a passer and look very much in the first quarter to facilitate, because being at home, if they can get any of these guys hot, that can carry through the rest of the game. But if they don't get hot early, you risk these guys just never getting hot. So it's finding ways to run off-ball screens for Kevin Love and George Hill. And, you know, if you play Rodney Hood to get something out of him, just run some action for those guys to just get going. And not necessarily just from three. They can find some backdoor cuts and see the ball go through the hoop early. then they might get one of these guys to catch fire enough where the Warriors have to pay attention to him. And if they're paying attention to somebody else besides LeBron, then that opens up passing lanes for everybody else, because that's one guy who's going to be drawn out of position. So offensively for the Cavs, I'm going to say getting somebody else going, having somebody besides LeBron be the leading scorer in the first quarter might be the way that they can score enough points to put pressure on that Warriors defense that might carry through for the rest of the game.
You know, one other thing they probably, I think that's a good point to an extent. I wouldn't say go in with that mentality all game. Then you might be getting a Kobe against the Suns game where he just was passing and they lost and he's just using it to try and prove a point, which maybe we'll see that in game four. Who knows? Another thing they need to do though is probably go after offensive rebounds a little bit more. In game two, they had 19 second chance points. That's going to definitely keep you in a game at least a little bit and get you some easy offense. It's when you're struggling to score otherwise. We all know that the Golden State Warriors aren't a tremendously great defensive rebounding team. They're 25th in the regular season in terms of defensive rebounding percentage. The Cavs aren't a great offensive rebounding team either in the regular season. They were 27th. So it kind of goes against what they want to do, but there is somewhat of a weakness there for Golden State. And if you're going to miss shots, you may as well try and grab them back. And if LeBron gets the ball down low in a good position, he at least has an easier chance of scoring. And that also conserves a little bit more energy for him without having to work, say, from the outside on the perimeter.
That is a high risk.
Very high risk. It's a hugely risky thing, because if you don't get that board, you've got Golden State going out and running, and you're just going to lose by 40 then.
Yeah, that's a very, very high risk play. I do think there's some value in sending somebody. I don't think you sell out, because I just think there's such a low percentage of offensive rebounds and converting those into points that the risk is too high, but who knows? I mean, maybe you need to. That's just one of those things. It's almost like doubling down on a bet when you're stacked.
You're already in a hole. Exactly.
Yeah. And you I'm losing. I'm definitely losing. So I might as well go all in on this and hope I get a little lucky. And then you can get back to somewhat even. Yeah. I totally see that.
But that's what we're saying. It's right now, like, the plan for the Cavaliers is hope something works. It's not, okay, we figured it out, let's now go out and execute it. Well, you know, we hope this is going to go our way.
Yeah, no, it's true. So that's offensively. Let's quickly do defensively. One thing I've heard a lot in my listening to other shows, it's been mentioned probably 5-6 different places. Do the Cavaliers trap. Instead of switching everything, you trap Steph Curry, get the ball out of his hands, because he's the guy that's been, like, throwing the knockout punches. Do you trap and get him out of the play and then just hope that throws the Cavs into a bit of a funk? I mean, the Warriors.
So this is the war. Yeah. So this is the weird thing. And you can't keep having Kevin Love switch on to Steph Curry, because that's not working. I don't know if trapping Curry is the right answer here. You know, I saw firsthand the Pelicans trap Damian Lillard in the first round of the playoffs that led to their sweep, and he was ineffective. They tried that some against the Warriors in the second round, and it doesn't work. When there's not tremendous other shooters out on the court, yeah, trap and force the ball out of his hands, and then you can maybe recover enough to stop one of those guys from driving to the rim or doing something else. When you've got three other shooters out on the court, it just takes a quick pocket pass right out before that trap hits, and all of a sudden it's a wide open 3-point look. And that's not what you want to do against Golden State, but I get that you still just can't keep leaving Kevin Love on an island against Curry. So I actually don't know.
I would say that I would not want to trap, except in very specific cases, depending on who else is out on the floor. But I don't know that there's any good combination out there that would really help. Two reasons. First of all, we've seen multiple times that Steph Curry giving the ball up and then quickly relocating, getting the ball back and hitting shots or making plays. So having him give the ball up isn't like the end of the play. That's been a very highly featured thing since game two. Secondly, this Cavaliers defense is just God awful at
not
making
good
decisions.
Not
They're
good.
Terrible at it. They're terrible in general, but the thing that made them somewhat effective against the Celtics was the Celtics so focusing on hunting out the mismatches, that they played a lot of ISO ball, and that doomed the Celtics. Now, of course, the Celtics don't have nearly the offensive players that the Golden State Warriors do, but the Warriors are also moving the ball. And so if you're trapping, you're taking a guy and basically pulling him out of position, and Curry gives up the ball, fine. But then that player quickly moves the ball, and you now have two guys that have been out of position up on Curry, and they've got to come back and somehow find guys and rotate and switch. They are not good enough at making those decisions. They will guaranteed get lost. Someone will get wide, wide open. And I can understand the strategy in a vacuum from a basketball X's and O's. You take a coach and you say, oh, you do this, you trap here, and then you rotate this way, blah, 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 blah. Fine. But in reality, these Cavaliers,
especially against this team.
Yeah, this is the worst combination.
If they were playing any other team, yeah, maybe this works. Or maybe you do some pre-switches early to get Kevin Love not going to switch on to Curry later, and you can kind of hide him that way a little bit. But then if you do that, they'll just find the mismatch. They're going to go at Love no matter what, where he is.
Yes.
Then you get Klay Thompson on him. Then you get Durant on him. You're cooked. It's just kind of one of those things.
Yeah, so I would say switching is not necessarily the way to go. I've heard some suggestion of a zone or something. I would rather even, not that I want the Warriors shooting over the top of a zone, but I want something from the Cavaliers that allows them to move less, and some sort of zone, even if they go like a 3-2 type zone where they're playing further out in the perimeter, something like that, something that at least you throw them at them for like 2-3 possessions, kind of throw them off a little bit, then come
back. Well,
it's like what
Dallas did to the Heat in that NBA Finals that they won, where they threw zone just in the right situations at LeBron, and it confused him. And he talked about it, and it was a great strategy. You can't run the whole game like that, but in a critical possession, it's maybe not the worst idea.
Yeah, and then if you can force the turnovers, like we said last week when we were talking about previewing the series, if you can force the turnovers and get out in transition and score, like the Warriors will turn the ball over. And I do think there's a high probability that they'll come into game three sloppy, feeling really, really good about themselves because they've heard us all talk about how the series is over. Like when that happens, they tend to get sloppy and turn the ball over. You throw a couple little wrinkles for 2-3 possessions and they don't know how to react. You get 2-3 turnovers, convert them into a layup and a three. You've scored 5 points. Maybe that fuels a little bit of a run. A couple of guys get hot, and you start to build a little bit of a lead. So that, for me, is the kind of Cavaliers-centric thing. You gotta come up with something. Not
something.
All out.
Yeah,
it's not a complete change in strategy, but every once in a while, throw something that they haven't seen this series and say, all right, there's two possessions of it. Now we're back to our switching. And then later on, you throw three possessions of it, and you get back and at least something that can give you a little bit of an advantage.
Yeah, I think that's kind of going to sum it up. I mean, it's still an uphill battle, and like I said, you know, we've been talking. It's still just you got to hope that works and that they don't just beat you another way, which they're very capable of doing. And this is a pretty intelligent basketball team, and in the next segment, I'm sure we're going to talk about it, is getting a very good defender back potentially.
Yes, let's first tell you that if you want to hear more about what these teams might be thinking strategy-wise, Locked On Cavaliers, Locked On Warriors, the two team-specific podcasts that are very, very good, very, very in-depth. We are your bite-sized kind of taste of the NBA. Go to those guys, Locked On Cavs, Locked On Warriors, and they will give you full 30, 40, 50-minute podcasts about their team's perspective, the strategy, a lot more about what we're talking about. So go make sure you check them out. So from the Warriors' perspective, this could be the series ender to me, because when we talk about wrinkles that you haven't seen before and you don't know how to deal with it, Andre Iguodala coming back.
Yeah, It's big. Like I wouldn't say offensively as much, and I don't think we need to spend as much time talking about the Warriors adjustments because, no. Well, they're up 2-0 and they don't really need to change a whole lot, to be honest. So the biggest thing to me with this, I guess we want to just kind of lump them together here is, well, Iguodala comes back. And this is a dude who won a finals MVP for defending LeBron James, where LeBron scored like 30, averaged like 34 in that series, and he still won finals MVP. So that tells you how important this guy can be to at least slowing down LeBron. And if you don't let LeBron get 50 or whatever it is, well, yeah, you're going to feel really good about winning. And frankly, they should have just been running Sean Livingston in his place the entire time and gone with their kind of like knockoff new death lineup or whatever it is you want to call it. And by the way, thinking of it, being a metal guy, that lineup should be called the Mega Death lineup now with Kevin Durant instead of Harrison Barnes in there.
That's a good one. I'm not a metal guy, so I wouldn't have thought of that. I think the Iguodala,
that's my contribution to this.
I love it. I think Iguodala coming back does change the dynamic defensively for the Warriors. And that really hurts, not just because of what he can do to LeBron, but if they're switching, you can put him on the guy that gets hot and not necessarily worry about LeBron. We've seen the Warriors take 51 points from LeBron and win. I don't know if LeBron can play any better than he did game one. And if he does, man, good for him. But that's as good as a guy can play in game one. They still managed to win that game for whatever reasons, whatever we can talk about, but that's already been talked about. Iguodala can come in, and if Rodney Hood comes in and is getting hot, then I would just say, check him, Iggy. Go check him and put out that fire, because we've talked about it. Everybody's talked about it. If LeBron gets nothing from his teammates, they will not win.
They're not going to win.
So Iguodala can be the guy that if Jeff Green has one of those surprisingly good games, well, you know what? Go check Jeff Green and take him out. Take out the other guys. We'll deal with LeBron. Take out the other guys, and then we'll just go score, score, score on their pathetic defense.
Yeah, I think it's as simple as that. Now, we don't know for sure that he's going to be playing. I think he got upgraded to questionable, right. So still 50-50. But like, I think everyone kind of has a feeling he's going to be playing. But of course, keep an eye on this on Wednesday as more and more comes out and we get closer and closer to game time. But yeah, you're right. If he's in there, it just makes this already really good defense even better. And that's a big problem. And they've just got more ways to beat you. They're a little bit deeper. We've seen them get kind of towards the end of their rotation and it doesn't look good. David West kind of looks like a shell of himself at times. So this just forces those worst players out and gives you another guy in there, making you a little bit deeper top to bottom. And you're not as worried now. All of a sudden, those lineups where you don't have, you know, say three of the four in there or only have two of them are even a little bit more scarier than they were before. And that's just an issue that the Cavs have to deal with. They're not good defensively, and they, you know, they've been struggling at times offensively, so it's just bad all around for them.
So I think for me, my one thing for the Warriors going in besides this is don't screw around. Like,
yeah,
it's that simple, right? It's as simple as come out with focus. Like, this is pure coach speak. This is, you're going to see this in the clip that they play before the game of Steve Kerr say, come out with focus, come out with intensity, match their energy. They're going to come out as energized as they've ever been. That another couple of days off, they're home, sleep in your own bed, go through your own routine. Be in your own locker room, be in your own space. You're comfortable, you're rested as you're going to be. They're going to come out in front of that home crowd and be energized. You have to match it. And if you get down, just minimize the damage. Don't screw around and throw like four careless passes and give them a quick 10-0 run to start the game. Like, if you can go out there and match them in the first quarter, come out of that first quarter, even if you're down, just be down by like single digits.
You'll feel comfortable.
Yeah. Then at that point, they can cruise along, come out and be third quarter Warriors and take this thing.
Yeah, and it's just, like you said, focus. Less of the ISO ball. Keep racking up your assists. We all know the numbers and the stats that I don't have in front of me, so maybe I can't say I do know them. But when they get like 25-plus assists, they're basically unbeatable. Go for that number. Less just Durant one-on-ones, which is where maybe you can kind of beat them a little bit defensively. I think they kind of have realized that this has been an issue, you know, at times in this series. It was a big issue during the Rockets series. Hopefully they've kind of pulled their heads out of the sand, let's say, here, and they realize that, and if they want to just go out and, you know, kind of roll through this game, that's all they need to do.
I think that's about it for Game 3. We're going to talk about Brian Colangelo, but first, I want to remind you that the Locked On Podcast Network is not just NBA. The NFL, they're in mini camps now, or they're doing OTAs or something, so everybody's worked up about the NFL. Go check out the Locked On NFL side of the podcast network. There's a team for your favorite team. If you are an NFL fan, then there is a Locked On podcast for you there as well. Every team is covered, so go search for your favorite team, the same place you searched for your Locked On favorite team or the Locked On NBA podcast. So Adrian Wojnarowski came out in an ESPN special, didn't tweet it. It's made its way to Twitter, though, and said, Wednesday may be the day that Brian Colangelo finds out what happens in the aftermath of those burner accounts being discovered. So everybody's talked about this to death, but we haven't. I want to get your sense of what do you think, considering that they apparently have interviewed his wife extensively, and there seems to be a growing consensus that his wife may be behind those burner accounts. So what do you think happens?
So we're not going to rehash this to death. And the way, like you said, it's been talked about in everywhere. This is maybe one of the bigger stories we've seen in a long time and the silliest in the NBA. And, you know, so with this, you know, we were going to bring it up because the Sixers are hiring Monty Williams, former Hornets and Pelicans head coach, to be the lead assistant, which I think is a great move. And I'll touch on that in a moment. But, you know, that's why I think this is relevant again. But yeah, I think you have to fire him. And, you know, I've talked about this a lot here. And even if it's not him, you know, he's still kind of spilling company secrets. And, you know, my girlfriend's a lawyer. She talks to me about some of her cases and stuff and tries to leave as much out as possible. But I know things I shouldn't. And I think that's probably a normal thing that happens between partners and people in relationships. You come home from work, you talk about work, and that's just how it goes. And it's never an issue till it becomes an issue. And this has become an issue. And there's a better way to go about defending your husband, which I think is a fine thing to do. I can tell you from experience, you know, Del Demp's wife is on Twitter and she defends him constantly. It's her. It's not a burner account. She never disparages players or does anything like that. She just defends her husband, which I think is a wonderful and normal thing and I have no problem with whatsoever. So there's a way to go about doing this and there's a way to go about not doing it. And it's almost like, well, you know, if unfortunately this is what she's doing and you must come home and really, really complain about things. And so you clearly feel this way, and because you feel that way, even if you had kept it a secret, you'd be fine, but now it's out. So we kind of have to just let him go, in my opinion, because of that.
I see your point. I will say this, that I don't think that a GM or an executive not being 100% happy with everything his players do is a surprise to anyone.
No, that, none whatsoever.
You know, like I don't have any information that Danny Ainge is 100% satisfied with everybody on his team. But you know what? I've seen Terry Rozier's Instagram and Snapchat from strip clubs, and I'm pretty sure that Danny Ainge will look at that and be like, shouldn't do that. And I'm sure he said that to somebody. And, I mean, he also doesn't have burner accounts, but the point is, a guy going home to his wife and complaining that Joel Embiid is acting a certain way on Twitter and I can't stand it, then that's normal. That's fine. His wife creating burner accounts, if it really is without his knowledge, then that to me changes things. If he can go into that locker room, this is the line for me. If he can go into that locker room and he can talk to those guys and they accept that, you know, yeah, I was venting about certain things. You shouldn't have, Joel, been doing this stuff on Twitter. I didn't like it. I complained to my wife about it and I didn't know she was going to do that, but it doesn't affect how I feel about you as a basketball player. If you can have that adult conversation with other adults and they're cool with you and it's not going to interrupt anything, then I think the Sixers try to keep him on because the draft is right around the corner. Free agency is right around the corner. This guy has intimate knowledge of all of the plans that the Sixers have, and to fire him now at a critical time for the Sixers in their development with a ton of free agent money, a very high draft pick, that could really, really hurt the franchise. And I'm sure that the Philadelphia ownership knows that and doesn't want to send the guy who's on the cusp of making these critical decisions. They don't want to send him home and bring in whomever, whatever GM you think might come in. That guy's going to be so far behind that it's just going to be a difficult task, and you risk hurting this franchise at a critical, critical time because there are guys out there, LeBron, Paul George, Chris Paul, those bunch of guys that could really help your franchise. That draft pick and the draft pick can obviously really help your franchise. And you're facing an Eastern Conference where the Boston Celtics are right there with you and about to take a huge leap with the return of Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving. So to lose any ground to a competitor that's running neck and neck with you, that's going to hurt. So good.
I'm going to keep it real. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off here, but like I'm going to keep it real because that's what we do on this podcast here. And I'm going to say I don't think it actually puts you as far behind as it could. You know, you can fire Colangelo, but keep the rest of the front office. Teams usually have about 10 or so guys that kind of make up that GM's room, if you will. And so their prep work and things like that are still going to be there, and you can bring in ultimately just a different guy to make the final decision. One of the things that Woj was also talking about was they haven't fallen too far behind, they think, in terms of free agents and other things, because Brett Brown is highly respected around the league. He's got that extension in there, so you know he's not going anywhere. And you can kind of maybe position him to be the guy running these meetings, different things like that. So maybe it won't scare off an agent bringing in his college player or what have you for a workout where things might go poorly and it gets leaked or whatever. I also think bringing Monty Williams in, and this was probably well in the works before all this broke, is also a good thing because that's about as good of a dude as you can have on your staff if you're looking kind of for that steadying hand at a good person who's not going to disparage players and different things like that. So, you know, I get what you're saying. You don't want to kind of make that move and do a knee-jerk thing and be like, oh, no, we need to kind of do all of our prep work and different things like that. But that's all going to stay the same. You don't necessarily fire the rest of the front office alongside that, or maybe promote, or you can kind of figure it out and work your way through without, say, you know, starting from the ground up. But you do make a really good point, and this comes down to is Joel Embiid going to say this is okay or not? And with his affinity for Hinkie and everything, I'm just not sure. And if all of a sudden those players won't trust him, and, you know, Embiid, no one wants to be disrespected like that. That's kind of the thing here, too. You know, that's really what it's going to come down to. And I'm not sure, but, man, it sounds like they basically have been interrogating Colangelo and his wife today.
Yeah, probably. I think they need to know that it's not Colangelo, it's his wife. That's basically what the ownership needs to know. Is it completely 100% his wife, and is he any sort of a driving force behind it, or is there any possibility that he's saying, hey, tweet this out for me, and kind of driving that? If he's driving it, then yeah, he's got to go, because that's not only, it's not just that he tweeted and defending, it's that there was sensitive information, and that's really what it comes down to. That sensitive, workout-related, health-related information got out. That's where we're really talking about a breach of trust, a breach of not just team etiquette, but privacy, stuff like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I want to say, since, again, this has been covered a lot everywhere, and you can get any kind of take on this, that I think this is more widespread around the NBA than people realize. And I think it shows you just kind of the pressures at the top in these kind of organizations. You can be a GM of a team, and you're one of 30. you're still human, and all the criticism and everything does get to you, and it's a human and natural reaction to try and defend yourself. So if he did create the burner accounts, it's just the pressure and everything maybe getting to him, and anyone would almost do something like this. Kevin Durant did it, and different things like that. Just try and defend yourself a little bit and get your side out, your side of the story out there a little bit more, when you're not really in position where you can go and just have a press conference and do that kind of thing. It just shows that just everyone kind of succumbs to this, and no one's infallible. But like I said, you know, I've heard rumors of burner accounts leaking information anonymously and things like that for other teams. And you think when stuff gets leaked to the press, it's to Woj or whoever it is, it's usually one side trying to push something on to that other or to get something out there to gain some leverage. And that was, there's no real difference when you boil it down to that essence in this story. It's just, this is way worse than looks really bad with all everything else tied to it.
Oh yeah. And look, there's 30 NBA teams. There's front office staffs. There's ownership groups. There are coaching staffs. There's how many people does that equal? You know, hundreds of people. And there's no way that those hundreds of people aren't all, completely sensitive to pressure. There are guaranteed, just by sheer statistical probability, there's guaranteed to be a certain number of people who are watching social media, who have either some sense of relief, some sensitivity to it all, and their outlet is through some burner account just responding to that and saying, because look, hey, you work your ass off, and you know, I'm in here as a coach. I get in here at 10 a.m. and I leave at 10 p.m. and I'm working my ass off and blah, blah, blah. How dare you criticize this guy, so I'm going to create this persona to defend myself or defend the team or whatever. That totally happens. Guaranteed that happens at every level from top to bottom. So for sure. And we've seen, like you said, player accounts have it. To me, I think for Philly, all the stuff I said holds for Colangelo. And the point that you made about Monty and Brett Brown, I think those are huge because players are in the locker room, on the floor with those guys day to day. They see Colangelo enough, but not day to day. And if they can come into work every day and feel good about the coach that they play for, the coaching staff that they play for, I think they'll be fine. And this can blow over if the front office feels comfortable with Colangelo didn't do any of this. He's kind of 100% innocent. And his wife just took his private rantings and turned it into some way to defend him and the team. And I think if they can settle on that, my personal opinion is that Colangelo keeps his job.
Yeah, like I said, I can see it going either way, and I understand your side of it completely, and I don't really disagree with that. I think it's just a black eye, and you want to kind of move on to this from maybe just that alone. You want to fire him. Last thing I want to say on this, so we can maybe end on a happy note, is with Monty Williams taking this job and going to this team and being an assistant coach and traveling around a bunch, it's got to make you think his family is a little bit settled and in a very good place after what happened with the tragic passing of his wife a couple of years ago, where he took that job in San Antonio to spend more time with his kids and family. He's going on the road again. Things have got to at least be a little bit better, and that makes me feel kind of good at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's a good positive note to end on. Monty Williams is universally regarded as one of the best people in the NBA. It's almost required that when you talk about him, you have to add that because that's how much he is respected. No one talks about Monty Williams without saying, hey, by the way, one of the nicest guys you're ever going to meet. So good for him. Good for his family. You know, I think that's definitely a good positive. And that's good place to end this podcast. I want to thank everybody for subscribing. If you are a regular subscriber, thank you. Go ahead and give us a 5-star rating. Give us a good review. We would really appreciate that. I'd appreciate it so much. I'd learn how to talk. If you are not a subscriber, if you're new to the show, welcome aboard. We are daily, so be sure to subscribe and spread the word. Tell your friends that they should be listening to the Locked On NBA podcast. We're here on the Locked On Podcast Network.